The story of Daniel in the lion's den is one of the best-known incidents in the Bible. From very early days, children who grow up in the church learn about the story in some form. I suppose that children learn about the story of Daniel in the lion's den and David and Goliath almost before they learn anything else. It has all the elements to make the account compelling. There is a heroic figure who suffers because of his exemplary character. There are wicked people, villains, who resent the character of Daniel and resolve to remove him from the world. There is a genuine danger in that Daniel had to stay a night in the presence of lions so hungry that when others were put in among them, they devoured them before they ever reached the bottom of the den. And again, as is true of Daniel's friends in chapter 3, this story has an amazing twist to it that the villains did not anticipate. They did not think that Daniel would be able to survive the lions. In fact, I'm sure that once they knew that Daniel was in the lion's den, they went and had a party, because they had got rid of this one who was such a problem for them. They never thought that they would become the food for the lions instead. The enemies of God's people never think it is possible that God is real or that he has any ability to intervene in such situations. They would more readily believe in voodoo and black magic than they would in the power of God. But Daniel's testimony was very clear. There was no magic involved. He said, God sent his angel to shut the mouths of the lions. In the mention of this angel in this chapter, there is another reference to the Lord Jesus Christ, the very one who appeared with Daniel's friends in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. You see, God's servants are never alone in the hour of crisis. The people of God can rely on the truth that the Lord is always with his people. The Lord will always achieve that which proclaims his glory and that which achieves the great benefit for his people. The details of the story are clear. There was resentment over the influence of Daniel in this new empire. The previous chapter ends with the death of Belshazzar, the last king of the Chaldeans, the last king of the Babylonians. He was the one of whom the Lord said, and Daniel said, that he had not humbled his heart, though he knew all the history of Nebuchadnezzar. But in this new kingdom, under Darius the Mede, there were people who coveted Daniel's position. He had a very powerful position, and they plotted his overthrow. Now, it's interesting in the story that they found no hint of scandal about him. He was probably one of the few who has ever labored in government of whom it could be said. So they felt that they could only use his service to the God of the Hebrews against him. They were sure that Darius would go along with their plans for this new law that targeted Daniel's regular practice. It was a law that turned the king into God. people for 30 days could make petitions only to the king. So when Daniel continued on with his regular practice, he became, through the law's invention, a lawbreaker, though he had been doing such things for a long time. There is a tendency for people to make criminals out of those who are serving the Lord. Now, the king was very sorry about the situation, but he couldn't do anything about it. He couldn't save Daniel from the law's penalty, for the Medo-Persian kingdom was inferior to the Babylonians in that once a law was established, you couldn't change it. So Daniel had to be thrown into the lion's den. But the next morning, Daniel was alive and unharmed. And the king ordered that Daniel's enemies be thrown into the lion's den instead. And the lions ripped all those people apart. Now, most children who have grown up in Christian homes have heard that story. But there is an aspect of this chapter that some people miss, and that is an account of the power of true faith and the serenity of that faith, even in the face of the most traumatic circumstances. It is striking that Daniel is not among those of whom we read by name in Hebrews 11. And some may wonder how it is that Samson and Jephthah are in that list in Hebrews 11 and Daniel is not. But you see, Daniel does appear. If you look at Hebrews 11 and verse 32, we will find a reference to Daniel. And what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and of Barak and of Samson and of Jephthah, of David also and Samuel and of the prophets. Now notice verse 33, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions. Whatever Daniel achieved in that situation, he did it by faith. And it was by faith in the Son of God, by faith in Jesus Christ, the one who came, the angel of the covenant, who came to be with him in the midst of the lions. And the chapter warrants us to conclude that Daniel spent the night in peace. Not a single roar during that whole time. So the best way for us to think about Daniel in this chapter is escaping the lion's den. Escaping the lion's den. Now, whether we will ever face a physical situation like that which Daniel faced is unknown. But spiritually, we face such situations every day. The Apostle Peter warned in his epistle that we have a powerful adversary. 1 Peter chapter 5 speaks of that adversary, where Peter likened that adversary to a roaring lion who is walking about looking for people to devour. So we have such an enemy. And the world takes the greatest delight in seeing the lions on the prowl against the people of God. So we have a definite interest in that which will silence the roaring lion. When we imagine being placed in the kind of situation that Daniel faced, we can feel our palms grow sweaty and our stomachs churn. But the grace of God, that generates faith in the hearts of his people enables those people in the midst of those sore trials to be at ease. When we look at this chapter, we don't find any evidence that Daniel challenged the people who hated him. We find no evidence that he was at all concerned about having to spend the night with the lions, because he was confident in the God to whom he prayed, much as his three friends were confident when they said to Nebuchadnezzar, "If it be so, our God is able to deliver us, but if not, let it be known unto thee that we will not serve thy gods." Now, I have no doubt that Daniel would have felt some of the natural physical responses to the threat of danger, but in his soul he was at peace. And that peace was not the product of the moment of crisis. It was already his through years of walking with God. When we think about Daniel, we have to recognize that he spent many years, in fact, almost his whole life, away from his native land. When he was young, he was taken captive. And he continued through the rest of the Babylonian Empire and then into the Medo-Persian Empire and finally into the reign of Cyrus the Persian. He became a senior citizen. By the latter stages of his life, probably in his 80s or 90s. But he was a man who walked with God. And it was the nature of his walk with God that highlighted the aspects of this story. And we're going to look at those aspects. There are three of them this evening. First of all, Daniel's integrity. Now, what Daniel achieved, you have to admit, was breathtaking. Daniel was one of the top advisors in the Babylonian kingdom. But he survived the transition from the Babylonian kingdom to that of Medo-Persia. Now, most of the time in history, when you have one regime that comes in and overthrows another, all of the people who were top people in that overthrown regime become targets for elimination. The executions generally begin. But Daniel proved to be even more prominent and influential under Darius and those who followed him than he was under Nebuchadnezzar and his successors. It was the advancement that came to him under Darius the king that caused such deep-seated jealousy. For these people, of whom we read in chapter 6, believed they should have the preferment that belonged to Daniel. Interesting, isn't it, how they referred to him as this Daniel? You can almost hear them spit the name out. The king thought to give Daniel the same kind of prestige, the same kind of power that the Pharaoh of Egypt many, many years before bestowed on Joseph. So that Daniel was the gatekeeper. If you wanted to get to the king, you would have to go through Daniel. And that was something the Medes and the Persians, this Hebrew, is controlling access to the king. And it was when they tried to engineer Daniel's downfall that they found the secret of his success, his integrity. Now, there were muckrakers in Daniel's time. A muckraker is an investigative reporter who goes around looking for dirt on public figures. Well, Daniel's enemies employed someone to search through all the records to see if there was anything amiss. Maybe he failed to report the disposition of some government money. Maybe he used his position to enrich himself, because they would think everybody does that. Surely he would be the one to do it. But they searched through all the records and they found nothing. And can you imagine the disappointment that these men had when they could not find anything to use against him? There was no hint of self-interest in Daniel. No hint of public or private scandal about Daniel. He was a man who purposed when he was young that he would not defile himself. If you look back at chapter 1 and verse 8, you find the measure of that resolve. Daniel 1 and verse 8. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. There was his purpose as a young man. And what a message for our children and our young people here tonight. Develop the purpose that you will not defile yourself. You see, the devil gets people to think that what you do in your youth is not going to affect your life later on. And if you believe that lie, you're going to prove how wrong it is. The challenge of Scripture to young people is emphatic. Keep yourself pure. That was Daniel's purpose. They looked for something they could use against him, but they couldn't find anything. Because he was faithful. He walked with God. So when you walk with God, the devil finds it much more difficult to get his hooks into you. So where did the enemies of Daniel have to go? They had to go to his faith. They said, we can't find anything against him except concerning the law of his God. Daniel had a reputation, you see. He was a man who prayed. He prayed to God. And he did so on a daily basis. So his enemies felt here was their opportunity. Now they may not have remembered from the Babylonian era the history of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Possibly they missed that lesson in the history course. But they were sure that they would prevail. Because they knew the king. They knew they'd get the king to go along. And they knew Daniel. They were sure that Daniel would just keep right on. So they made up a law that really had just one person as its target. And that person was Daniel. What are we to learn from Daniel's integrity? We're to learn to live in such a way as to resolve that we will worship Christ consistently. Now, Darius thought the law was a good idea. He had no problem. He signed it. But once he did that, he could not overturn it. And the enemies of Daniel, once that law was signed, were confident they would destroy him. And that brings us to the second thing in the story, Daniel's spirituality. Now let's come to verse 10 in the chapter. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God. Now, for some people, they would say, well, this law, I think this is a bad law, so I'm going to provoke a confrontation. And they would say, this is what Daniel was doing here, trying to provoke a confrontation with this law. But the key clause in verse 10 is the last one. As he did aforetime, he opened his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem. He kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. That is, the passage of the law did not change anything for Daniel in terms of how he went about his worship of God. He would not forsake the practice of praying to God, whatever the laws of the kingdom were. It didn't matter to him. So he was another in that line of servants of God who refused to accommodate the whims of ungodliness, even when they are in the form of legislation. I trust we shall not find ourselves having to face such dilemmas in our own time. But who knows? Because the apostles of Christ faced a similar threat in the New Testament. Acts chapter 4. Acts chapter 4. And verse 19. But Peter and John answered and said unto them, whether it be right in the sight of God to hearken unto you more than unto God, judge ye. For we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard. The rulers of the council commanded them not to speak at all in the name of Jesus. And they said, whether it's right for us to hearken to you more than unto God, you have to judge. But we're just speaking the things that we have seen and heard. Chapter 5 and verse 28. They brought them again before the council. And the council said to them, did not we straitly command you that ye should not teach in this name? And behold, ye have filled Jerusalem with your doctrine, and intend to bring this man's blood upon us. Yes, and just not long before, those people saying that very thing had said before Pilate, his blood be upon us and upon our children. We read in verse 29, then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men. So here was Daniel taking this same approach. We ought to obey God rather than men. Daniel's life then was one of stability. It's one of the hallmarks of those who walk with God, stable lives. That is, he was not bouncing from one thing to another. He was simply going on, persevering in that which he knew God had called him to do. So his behavior then didn't change. When this new law was signed, he didn't say, well, I better now stop praying, or if I pray, I should pray quietly and in secret. But it was that stability that was the thing on which the enemies of Daniel were counting. They knew they would get him. And they did. And the king was very sorry. When he realized, you can imagine the king, when he realized that Daniel was the one who was the target, He reproached himself for being the tool of these people. But I want you to notice something, that even as Daniel was being cast into the lion's den, his testimony had an impact on the king. Look at verse 16. And the latter portion of the verse, the king spake and said unto Daniel, thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. And the king was so overwrought, we read in verse 18, that he went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. And the hours passed very slowly. We read in verse 19, he arose very early in the morning and went in haste unto the den of lions. He wanted to find out, was Daniel still alive? And that impact on the king led to the last thing we observe here, Daniel's deliverance. When the voice of Daniel came from the den of lions, the king knew that Daniel's God had intervened. Notice what Daniel said in verse 22. My God hath sent his angel and hath shut the lions' mouths, that they have not hurt me. For as much as before him innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt. He was saying to the king, I have not offended you at all, that I should be brought to this place. Innocency had been found in Daniel. Daniel showed here that he understood the gospel by using this expression, innocency was found in me. He was saying not only had he not offended against the king, but he was a justified man before God. He was a pardoned man before God. And a man who knows that he has been justified believes God. And the very fact that he believed in God is written as the cause of his deliverance. The king commanded. In verse 23 we read, the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him because he believed in his God. And when they brought the accusers, and it's a sobering account, because not only were the men who accused Daniel brought, but their families, all of them. The families suffered as well, and they were cast into that den of lions, and God's angel was not present there, and the lions tore those people to pieces. And then came a new law. And the new law was that in every dominion of the kingdom, people should humble themselves in fear before the God of Daniel. What a testimony Daniel had left with this man, the king of the kingdom. He said, he is the living God and steadfast forever, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in earth, who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. The impact of your testimony can never be measured fully, but you can be sure that God knows it, and he will cause it to prosper. Daniel escaped the lion's den by faith in Jesus Christ. But his position was the same as that of his friends from chapter 3. That is, it didn't matter to him whether he would be delivered out of that lion's den or whether he would be delivered from it into the presence of God. He was going to believe God. He was going to continue on as he had always done. So the question that this passage raises for us is, do you believe God? Here was one who believed God. And that belief in God had a definite impact on the way in which he conducted his life. Those who know the saving and justifying grace of God through faith in the only Redeemer, they will know the power that was in the man called Daniel. He escaped the lion's den and left us not only an interesting story, but a legacy of faith, of walking with God, that continues with us to this very hour. May God find that we are faithful in the same way, following after him and valuing that grace that justifies us before God's sight.